Right, so this week's parsha is Parshas Baaloscha, and there are a lot of themes in the parsha. It begins with the mitzvah of Aaron lighting the menorah, and it goes on to deal with a lot of topics: the topic of the dedication of the Levim, the topic of setting out towards the land of Israel, Pesach Sheni. And then complaints, and Eldon and Medad, and Moshe Rabbeinu needing help, and the end of the parasha, of course, Miriam complaining about Moshe Rabbeinu and her getting tzaras. But the beginning of the parasha really is unique, that there's a tremendous amount of discussion about the beginning of the parasha. So the parasha begins with Vayidaber Hashem and Moshe Lemor. Hashem commands Moshe to say, Daber l'Aaron, tell Aaron, v'amarte lav. Again, explain to Aaron, Ba'aloscha Saneros, when you lift up the flames of the menorah, El mul pnei ha-menorah ya'iru shiva saneros. The flames are to be turned to the center of the menorah, and that's where all the flames are to rise up. And the verse says, Vayas kein Aaron, Aaron did so, El mul pnei ha-menorah ha'ala neroseha, to the center of the menorah, he lifted up the flames. Kasher tziva Hashem es Moshe, as Hashem commanded Moshe. So Rashi says here, very famous Rashi. Rashi says, Vayas kein Aharon, Aharon did so. Lahagid shvacho shel Aharon. This is to tell you of the praise of Aharon, Shaloshina, that he didn't change, he didn't deviate. So all the commentators ask, well, would we expect Aharon to change? Of course Aaron's not going to change. What's this greatness? Vayas kein Aharon, Aharon did so. Shalosh Shina, he didn't change. Hashem said to him to light the menorah towards the center flame, bring up all the flames to the center, and he did it. He didn't change, he didn't deviate. Would we expect him to change? So I remember as a kid, my father told me, he remembered when Rav Aaron Cutler, of blessed memory, passed away, he went to the funeral. And at the funeral, the Satmar Rebbe of Yoel Teitelbaum spoke. So Rav Yoel Teitelbaum, he was a great genius. He said this famous question. The verse says in this week's parsha, "Vayas kein Aaron, Aaron did so." And Rashi says this is his praise, and he didn't change. Would we expect Aaron to change? If God says do A, of course Aaron's going to do A. Why would we think otherwise? What's the praise that he didn't change? So he said in a homiletical twist, he said Rav Aaron Cutler. He was the explanation of this Rashi, because he had a very tumultuous life. He grew up in Lithuania, learned in a yeshiva, Slobodka, then he became, you know, the son-in-law of Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer, became the head of his own yeshiva, and then he went through the horrors of most of his students being murdered. He escaped, comes to America in the middle of the war, difficulties in this country, he was so involved in trying to save lives of people in Europe, and then afterwards setting up really a whole movement through the Lakewood Yeshiva. And when he was trying to do that, everybody told him it's impossible. They said it can't be done in America. In America is different. Orthodoxy in America was devastated by the turn of the 20th century, when all the Jews started coming from Russia and Poland in the early 1900s, many of them who came were Orthodox. And within 10, 20 years, they lost it. It was very difficult. You know, people weren't skilled. The jobs that they got were in the sweatshops. If they didn't work on Shabbos, they were fired. There was no Medicaid, and there was no Great Society programs. There was no welfare. People starved. People were thrown out of, you know, became homeless and, you know, impoverished. It was very, very difficult. And people wanted to be American. They wanted to live the American dream. They sent their kids to public school. Maybe there was Talmud Torah a little bit in the shuls in the afternoons for the kids who went to public school. But for the most part, the kids went to public school. And within a generation, there was almost nothing left. Thousands and thousands and thousands left. So the people who were trying to reverse the tide, and they were heroic people. they were really heroic people. Their approach always was that you could be American and you could be Orthodox. So So, you know, people like Rabbi Soloveitchik, he came here, he had a doctorate from Berlin. And in Boston, he started a day school. It wasn't a yeshiva in the classical sense. There were boys and girls together in the same class and a lot of secular studies. And he tried to, it was a point of pride if a kid would make it to Harvard. It was a day school with a little, you know, Torah. Probably, I don't know the curriculum there, but my guess would be it was probably, you know, 30% or 40% Torah and probably 60 or 70% secular studies. And that wasn't just Rabbi Soloveitchik who was taking that approach. That was the approach that everyone was taking. Torah Vidas. Why is it called Torah Vidas? Because Torah is Torah learning. Vidas is general wisdom, like Yeshiva University's mantra, Torah Umada. That was the mantra of Torah Vidas. And the people who started Torah Vidas, Rabbi Zev Gold, these were Mizrahi people. These were Zionists, religious Zionists. They started Torah Vidas. And Reb Shraga Feivel Mendelevich, who was the head of the school, he was trying to create an orthodoxy like this. He, even though he came from Hungary, he taught himself German. He read the writings of Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch. He wouldn't call himself rabbi. He called himself Mr. Mendelowitz. And he tried to create, you know, this cadre of people who would be, you know, Torah Vidas, that secular studies would be learned. He even tried to open up a university at one point. He tried to get a charter to open a college, as did Rav Huttner in Yeshivas Chaim Berlin. Again, Chaim Berlin also. Who was Rav Chaim Berlin? Rav Chaim Berlin was the son of the Netziv. You know, his brother was Rav Meir Bar Ilan. Bar Ilan University is named for Rav Meir Bar Ilan. So the people who were trying to do anything in America, and they were heroes. Rabbi Soloveitchik, when he opened the Maimonides School in the 1930s in Boston, he had pickets outside of his home by the members of the UJA of Boston, United Jewish Appeal. In Boston it's called CJP, Combined Jewish Philanthropies. They were outside of his home picketing. You know, Rabbi Soloveitchik is bringing us back to the ghetto. In America, it's different. You need to go to public school. You know, we're going to have anti-Semitism here if we're going to have a separatist Jewish school. They're going to be upset with us. There were pickets outside of his house. There were demonstrators. It was a very heroic stance, but the stance was, we understand that America is very appealing, we understand you want to be practical, you want to live the American dream. We're going to create institutions that will enable you to do that and still hold on to Torah and to mitzvos and to give you Torah and mitzvos. And that, you know, these giants, Rabbi Soloveitchik or, you know, Mr. Mendelowitz, these were like, you know, the proverbial story of the kid who's got his finger in the dam to try to hold back the tidal wave. And they were trying very heroically to try to save something. And into this comes Rav Aaron Cutler, and he says, we're going to do it totally differently. We're going to go back to the way it was in Lithuania. We're going to have yeshiva with no secular studies. Rav Aaron Cutler was even against teaching in English. He said, we're going to teach in Yiddish, the way it was in Europe. No changes at all. Just the way it was there. To this day in Lakewood, the overwhelming majority of the high schools don't have secular studies. I think there are two high schools with secular studies in all of Lakewood. There are like 35 high schools. They don't have secular studies in high school. They finish the secular studies with eighth grade. So the Satmar Rebbe said, you know, when Rav Aaron Cutler came, people said, America's different. You know, you can't do it this way. You can't do it the way you did in Lithuania. America, if you can do anything, it'll be like, you know, Rabbi Soloveitchik. It'll be like Rabbi Hirsch. Torah im derech eretz, Torah umada, Torah vadas. You can't, you know, have just Torah. America, the winds are too strong. The waves are too strong. The culture is too strong. And Rav Aaron Cutler said, I'm not changing. I'm not changing at all. I'm doing it exactly the way it was done in Lithuania. I'm not changing at all. And that is so courageous. And that's lahagid shvacho. That's to say his praise. Shaloshina. That despite all that the world around him changed, he didn't change. He didn't change at all. Nothing about him changed. The world may have changed, but he didn't change. And so the Satmar Rebbe then, you know, suggested, I guess homiletically, And that was true about Aaron HaKohen as well, that he had a lot of ups and downs in his life, where Moshe becomes the leader instead of him, even though he's the older brother, and then he has the sin of the golden calf and the building of the Mishkan and up and down. But through it all, Shaloshina, he didn't change. He stayed the same way he was, the same consistent person. The world around him may have changed, but he didn't change. They have this famous line about the Satmar Rebbe, who said this idea, that when he came to America, he was walking around with the same dress that they used to wear in Romania, the long coat and the wide hat, wide-brimmed hat. So people said, you know, America makes everybody lighter. You can't do this in America. He said, I'll make America lighter. Ich will Kyle Mach in America. I'll make America lighter. You know, I'll make the Americans take themselves less seriously. That was his point of view. So that's one classical answer to this question. Again, the question is, you know, what's the praise of Aaron Shaloshina? The one classical answer is that he didn't change despite what was going on around him. I saw a similar answer in this beautiful book called Parsha Parables by Rabbi Mordechai Kamenetsky. He has a really beautiful story about Rav Shlomo Hyman. That Rav Shlomo Hyman was actually one of the Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Vadas, and his style of teaching was very animated. He'd be screaming waving his arms around and sweating, and he put in so much effort into the presentation. At the end of a class, he would just be exhausted. So there was one day in the early 40s, it was very snowy, and only four boys showed up to class in Torah Vadas. So Shlomo Hyman walked in, and it was as if the room was filled with 70 boys, and he was screaming and shouting and jumping and sweating and, you know, drama. So at one point, one of the boys said, Rebbe, there are only four of us. It's just four of us. You know, you don't have to entertain the room, you know. So Shlomo Hyman said, you think I'm teaching four people? I'm teaching you four and your students and their students and their students. You don't know what I'm doing. I'm doing something huge here. This is very big. These four, it's not just the four. It's you and your students and their students. This is monumental. So that's another idea. Lahagid shvachos shel Aaron shaloshina, that sometimes a person gets involved in a project and he doesn't realize how big it is. He says, oh, it's a small thing. But the praise of Aaron was he didn't change. Even if it was seemingly a small thing, he felt it was a big thing. And he put himself into that with all of that effort, realizing this is monumental. I'm impacting not just the people in front of me, but I'm planting seeds to impact many, many generations. My teacher, the Hasidim, say another explanation, and they connect the menorah to the idea on Hanukkah of the Or HaGanuz, of the hidden light. It's an idea in the Hasidic sources that when we light the Hanukkah menorah, what we really have is the in those flames is shining a very, very special light. On the first day of creation, Hashem made light. Now, that's not a light that we know of, because we know of light through the sun, but the sun was only created on day four. So on the first day of creation, it was some special light. It's not around anymore. So Rashi says it's a light that was hidden away for the righteous. In the world to come, the righteous will get to benefit from that light. So there's a tremendous light, this hidden light, which is shining in the menorah. Whenever we light the menorah, a little bit of that hidden light is shining. So the Hasidim try to connect that idea of the hidden light that shines in the menorah of Hanukkah to this lighting of Aaron. So Wilson pointed out that the beginning of the Parsha, maybe to explain this Rashi, the Parsha has the repetition, Daber el Aharon, speak to Aaron, and then again, Va'amarto elav, and tell him, Ba'aloscha saneros, when you light the candles, Omul pnei ha-menorah ya'iru shiva saneros, the candles should shine to the center of the menorah. So why does it say twice, Daber el Aharon, and then again, Va'amarto elav, command Aaron and explain to him. So the Al-Shech HaKadosh explains that in lighting the menorah, There's a tremendous amount of secrets in the lighting of the menorah. When you light the menorah, there are all sorts of Kabbalistic achievements that are being achieved at that moment. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealed all these secrets of what the menorah is all about to Moshe and told him to tell Aaron. So that's why it says, Daber el Aaron, tell Aaron all the secrets. And after the secrets, Vamarta love, tell him in a revealed way, Valoscha Saneros, when you light the candles, and Lopnea menorah Yerushava Saneros, the candles should be facing the center. Because the secrets, says the Al-Shech, are not supposed to be written in the Torah, because the Torah is only about the revealed world. But they're hidden. And the secrets are all hidden there. So that's Daber el Aaron, speak to Aaron, all these secrets. Ramarta love. And then it says again, and tell him something else, tell him the revealed matter, which is to light the menorah. So now, normally when you do a mitzvah on a daily basis, over time, as you understand more and more, right? Maybe you read a book about the importance of this mitzvah and what you're achieving through this mitzvah. So then when you do it the next time, you have greater passion because now you have much more understanding of the mitzvah. I feel on a personal basis, one of the things I'm so grateful to Daf Yomi for is that I appreciate keeping halacha much more. Before I was into Daf Yomi, I was very into Chassidus. So Chassidus is amazing. It really touched my neshama in a very deep way. But I didn't necessarily understand, you know, the significance of this law or that law. But when you start learning the Gemara, so there's this amazing sense of understanding that these details have tremendous importance. You know, the sages go back and forth about this detail and that detail, you know. Tomorrow's daf is going to be all about chinuch, about educating a child. So the Gemara is going to say that you have to buy a lulav for your child once he knows how to shake the lulav. One second. Once he knows how to shake the lulav, you actually fulfill the mitzvah when you pick up the lulav. It should be once he knows how to pick up the lulav. Why did it say once he knows how to shake the lulav? So there's a famous thought from the Brisker Rav. He says when it comes to teaching someone to do a mitzvah, you can't teach him halfway. You can, when you teach him the ideal way. The ideal way to shake lulav is to also ideal way to take lulav is to shake it in each direction. So once you're shaking it in each direction, then he can do it in the right way. Then he's obligated in chinuch. That's why Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where he says if a parent can, he should take his child with him to shul and he should daven with the minyan. And that's better than the kids of the shul having their own tefillah group. Because he says if you want to train someone, you want to train him to do the mitzvah the right way. The right way to daven is with a minyan. If you're davening, a group of 10-year-olds, it's not a minyan. But if he's davening in shul with his parents, he's davening in a minyan. So when you take a 10-year-old, you should take him into shul to daven, because when you're training him, you want to train him in the ideal way of doing it. So only when you learn, only for me personally, when I learn these gemaros, then I start to appreciate, now I understand why, a little bit of why, not the ultimate why, but a little bit of why, understanding a little bit of why, now creates much more of an incentive to fulfill and to feel good about fulfilling, because I understand what I'm doing, I understand why I'm doing it. So that's true with every mitzvah. When you understand the mitzvah, when you have secrets of the mitzvah and what you're accomplishing with the mitzvah, so that creates a tremendous motivation to fulfill the mitzvah, because you understand why you're doing the mitzvah. So think about the following thing. What do we have here in this week's parsha? Hashem says to Moshe, Daber al Aaron, which as we said means teach Aaron all the secrets, and then tell him the revealed thing, Ba'alos Chasaneros. When did this happen? So Rashi tells us, really we should have been hearing about this earlier. Why do we hear about this now? Now to light the menorah. So Rashi says, Aaron felt bad for the last 12 days. Each leader of a shevet got to bring korbanos to dedicate the mizbeach. But Menashe brought and Ephraim brought. Levi didn't bring. See, here Aaron didn't get to bring korbanos. He's a leader of a shevet, and his shevet wasn't represented. So he felt bad. Am I not as good as the other leaders? So Hashem tells him, no, you are greater than they. You get to light the menorah. You're greater than the other leaders. So when did this happen? After they brought their korbanos. So they brought their korbanos for 12 days, starting on the first of Nisan, The first of Nisan was, you know, the leader of Yehuda, Nachshon ben Aminadav. And then you had the leader of Yisachar on the second day of Nisan, and the leader of Zvulun on the third day of Nisan. So now it's after 12 days. So it's on the 13th day of Nisan. On the 13th day of Nisan, Hashem tells Aaron, don't feel bad. You get to light the menorah. And how does the Al-Sheikh explain it? Daber al Aaron, tell Aaron the secrets. And now explain to him the laws. But one second. One of the acts of service of a Mishkan is to light the menorah. That's a daily service, to light the menorah and offer the ketores. So Aaron was doing it before also. But he just didn't understand what he was doing. He was doing it, he was told to do it. He didn't have any explanation of the secrets, he didn't have an explanation of the reasons for the laws. He was to go light. Now after 12 days, on day 13 he feels bad, he wasn't part of the Mizbeach. Hashem says, listen, you get the menorah every day. You've been doing it for 12 days. That's bigger. And he explained to him all the secrets of the menorah. So this is what Rashi is saying. Vayas kein Aaron. Aaron did so. This tells you his praise, Shaloshina. He didn't change. What does it mean he didn't change? His doing with understanding and with passion and with excitement through knowing the secrets was no change from the way he was doing before when he didn't know any secrets. And that's a very powerful level. The great Hasidic Rebbe of Meirel of Primishlan said, the verse says, Ki higdalta al kol shimcha imrasecha. For you've made greater than any name your command. What that means is, if a Kabbalist, when they meditate on letters of Hashem's name, the Shemos HaKadoshim. For Hashem, greater than all the names is Imrasecha. Just listening to what Hashem said. Greater than all the meditations of names, just to follow it because Hashem said to do it. And Aaron, the first 12 days, was doing it because Hashem told him to do it. He didn't have any understanding. On day 13, he has the understanding. But he had as much passion when he was doing it for the first 12 days with no understanding as when he had all the secrets and all the Kabbalah and all the Halacha on day 13. This is Shvacho Shal Aaron, the praise of Aaron, Shaloshina, that he didn't change. That when he had all the understanding, it wasn't a change from how he was before the understanding. Because in both cases, it was with tremendous passion and with tremendous excitement. That's one idea that Rav Wolfson says. Another idea that Rav Wolfson suggests about this Rashi, Lahagid Shvacho Shal Aaron Shaloshina, this is a more classical idea, is that when a person is inspired and he's lifted up, so with time he just gets used to it. The praise of Aaron was that when he was lifted up and he was given these special tasks, he didn't change from that inspiration. He grabbed the inspiration. He kept growing. He kept working with it. He didn't let go. Lahagid shvacho shel Aaron shaloshina. Now another idea here about shvacho shel Aaron shaloshina I saw in the Or Gedal Yahu. And he says a very beautiful idea here. And that is the end of Parshas Naso. The last sentence was describing the Mishkan. And the end was, Uvevo Moshe el Ol Moed L'daber Ito, when Moshe would come to the Mishkan to speak with Hashem, Vayishmas HaKol Medaber Elav Me'al HaKapores Asher Al Aron HaIdus. He would hear the voice of God speaking to him from the cover that was on top of the Holy Ark. Mibein Shnei HaKruvim, from between the two cherubs, Vayidaber Elav, and Hashem would speak to him. Moshe would hear the voice coming from the Aron. So the end of Parshas Naso is God communicating to Moshe through the Aron. What's the beginning of Parshas Baaloscha? It's lighting the menorah. The Nitziv explains that the word Aron has really within it the letters of the word Or, light. And menorah has within it the letters of the word Ner, candle. Now candle also creates light, just like Or is light. So why are there two vessels both connected to light? Aron, which has within it the word Or, and Menorah, which has within it the word Ner. Because The verse says in Tehillim, Ki ner mitzvah v'torah or. Light is Torah. Torah is the source of light. And there are two parts to the Torah. There's Torah shebichsav, and there's Torah shebaal peh. There's the written Torah and the oral Torah. The aron, which has the luchos with God's writing, that's the symbol of the written Torah. The menorah is the symbol of the oral Torah. So in light of that distinction, we can say the end of Parshas Naso is that Hashem is talking to Moshe from the Aron. Hashem speaking to Moshe from the Aron, the light of the Aron, that's the written Torah. Parshas Baaloscha is Aron should light the menorah. That's already the ideal of the oral Torah. And we can put it in this following way. We know that the Torah says that when Hashem told Moshe to go take the Jews out of Egypt, Moshe says, how can I go? I have a difficulty speaking, kvad peh, kvad lashon. So Hashem says, that's okay, you'll speak to Aaron. The Aaron, v'hu yelecha lefeh, he's going to be your mouth. That's the Torah shebaal peh, the Torah of the mouth. Moshe is the written Torah, and Aaron is the mouth, the oral Torah. As we find, ki sifsei kohen yishmeru das, Torah yivakshu mipihu. The verse says in Malachi, for the lips of the Kohen will preserve knowledge, they'll seek Torah from his mouth. That the Kohanim, they're the ones who have Torah's emes, haisa b'fihu, they have the true Torah in their mouth. The oral Torah explicates and explains and elaborates on what's written in the written Torah, just like Aaron would explain and elaborate and teach what Moshe, the messages that Moshe was given. So it's an interesting thing here. The verse says here, Vayas Kein Aaron, that Aaron would light the menorah. Now, it's an interesting thing because Al Pi Halacha, you don't actually need a Kohen to light the menorah. You need a Kohen to clean the menorah, hatavas haneros, but adlaka kashera bizar. The lighting can be done with a non-Kohen. So the classical question is, if everybody can do it, so why is Aaron doing it? Vayas Kein Aaron. Aaron's the one lighting, but everybody can light. What's so special? Aaron's portion, you get to have the menorah. Everybody could light the menorah. So the answer now we have is the following. The lighting of the menorah would enable people to understand the oral Torah. The lighting of the menorah added to the connection to the oral Torah. Just like the Aron brought the written Torah into this world, the oral Torah was brought into this world through the menorah. And Aaron, whose job is to amplify what Moshe is teaching, he's the person of the oral Torah. That's why Aaron is the one who lights the menorah, and he's seeking to light the menorah, especially when more and more of the oral Torah is being revealed as the Jews are in the desert. So Rashi says, famous Rashi, why do we have the section of Nesiim right before the lighting of the menorah? Aaron felt bad. He said, you know, why am I not bringing karbanos to inaugurate the Mizbeach? Hashem tells him, you have a bigger portion, you get to clean and light the menorah. But lighting the menorah is only one mitzvah. There were many, many karbanos that were brought here. So the Ramban says that really this is a reference to the story of Hanukkah. That Aaron felt bad he didn't get to inaugurate the Mizbeach. Hashem tells him, your descendants are going to inaugurate the Beis HaMikdash through the miracle of Hanukkah. So why is the miracle of Hanukkah so much more special than what's happening here? Than the bringing of the Karbanos to inaugurate the Mizbeach and the Mishkan? But maybe this is the answer. Because the whole holiday of Hanukkah is about the oral Torah. The whole holiday of Hanukkah coincides with the tremendous growth of the oral Torah. Because till Hanukkah, we were basically led by prophets. The prophets, the last prophets, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi, were members of Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, the men of the Great Assembly. The last member of the Great Assembly was Shimon HaTzadik. Shimon HaTzadik was the leader and the Kohen Gadol when Alexander the Great comes to Israel. So the transition from prophets to sages coincides with the arrival of the Greeks in the land of Israel. And that was the whole thing. When we had the temptation of idolatry, then we had prophecy as the antidote to idolatry. Once we lost the temptation for idolatry, we also lost prophecy. And what took the place of the temptation of idolatry? The Greeks came with their heresy, with their denial of God and their materialism and positivism and philosophies. That was their replacement of the power of idolatry. They said, no, instead we'll just deny God entirely. That was what the Greeks were all about. The Greeks were denying the existence of God, and their kfira was their form of idolatry. And what's the antidote to that? The oral Torah, the sages of the Tanaim and the Gemara. The oral Torah, that's really the whole story of Hanukkah. That's the subtext of Hanukkah, that we won with the oral Torah against the Greeks who were attacking the oral Torah. So in light of that, we can say that Parshas Naso ends with the written Torah, Hashem speaking to Moshe from the Aron. And then Hashem says, but Aaron, you have something greater. You have the oral Torah, and that is that you get to light the menorah. And the lighting of the menorah, that never ends. There's a beautiful medrash about the lighting of the menorah, very touching. The medrash says, this idea that Hashem tells Aaron to light the menorah is like a king who has a very dear friend. Now, the king is the king. He's royalty. The friend is a commoner. So the king says to his friend, you know, I'm going to come to your house, and I'd like to eat in your home. So the king, the friend is excited, and he, you know, scrubs the floors and washes the tablecloth and takes out his plates and nicest silverware, and he lights, you know, torches and candles. And then he sees down the road the king coming. And when the king is coming, he's coming with a whole retinue of hundreds of people, horsemen and chariots and jesters and ministers and lights and the level of the raiments and the garb and the costumes. And he's like, oh my gosh, you know, relative to that, what I've got's nothing. So he quickly takes away his tablecloth and puts away his plates and puts out all of his candles. The king shows up. He says, I don't understand. I thought you were going to prepare for me. He said, I did. But then when I saw what you have, what I have is an insult compared to what you have. I put it all away. Better to have your stuff. The king said, no, I want your things. He tells all his people, you go away. He said, you bring out your stuff, and you and I are going to eat together. Says the Medrash, Hashem is all the light in the world. He doesn't need our lights. We're going to light a menorah for him. He said, you know what? I'm going to put away my lights. I want to come be with you. I want to have your menorah. So it's a beautiful, touching medrash, but says Rav Gedalia, sure, that's what the oral Torah is all about. The written Torah is Hashem's dictation. What's the oral Torah? It's just our little interpretations, our meager flames. What are our lights? What could our lights do? They can't do much. Our lights are nothing relative to Hashem's tremendous light. So, but Hashem says, I want your little light. I want your oral Torah. So maybe that's Vayas Kein Aharon. The Zohar says that on the first day of creation, the verse says, Vayomer Elokim yihi or. What is the next verse? Vayihi or. God said, let there be light, and there was light. But with everything else in creation, it says, Vayihi chein. God said, let there be a barrier in the waters, Vayihi chein, and it was so. Why didn't it say about the light, and it was so? The Zohar says, because the light was put away. All the other things were so. They were established, and they're there. But the light was put away. That's why it's not Vayihi Chein. But what does it say here with Aaron's lighting the menorah? Vayas Kein Aaron. Aaron made the Kein for that hidden light. That light which was put away, Aaron brought out when he lit the menorah. But maybe this is Shvacho Shel Aaron, the praise of Aaron that he didn't change. The praise of Aaron was that he didn't change from this level, the same way when he first lit the menorah. In his lighting, he was recreating the Ora Gonos, the hidden light. He was bringing the hidden light out, and it was shining in the flames. This is his praise that for 40 years, whenever he lit the menorah, he brought about the shining of this hidden light. Now, the holy Baal Shem Tov said that the light that Hashem hid away on the first day of creation was hidden in the Torah. And maybe the place where it's hidden is in the oral Torah. And so through lighting the menorah, Aaron is bringing about this hidden light from the oral Torah. And that's what the Ramban is saying, that the light of Hanukkah is still here despite everything. Because the light of Hanukkah, the Rokeach, tells us is how many lights. You light one candle the first night, two the second. It's a total of 36 candles. The 36 candles, the Rokeach says, correspond to the 36 hours in the beginning of the creation of the world when that hidden light was still shining. Hashem put it away after 36 hours. That's also why we have a concept in the Gemara Masechta Sukkah that there are 36 hidden tzaddikim, because 36 is connected to this idea of the hidden lights. And how many Masechtos are there in Shas? 36 Masechtos in Shas. Because the oral Torah is what contains this hidden light. And maybe that's what the Ramban is saying, that the hidden light of the menorah, that appears when we study the oral Torah. And that's the consolation to Aaron. Aaron feels bad. He wasn't part of the inauguration of the Mishkan. But Hashem tells him, don't feel bad. You have something even greater. You get to light the candles. You get to draw out the hidden light which is found in the oral Torah. Rav Wilson points out that in regards to Hanukkah, there's a classical question. The Beis Yosef asks, we celebrate Hanukkah for 8 days because of the miracle of the oil burning for 8 days instead of just for one night. So the Beis Yosef says, but if there was enough oil for one night, it should be a 7-day miracle. There was enough for one night. It's only 7 days that is a miracle. There are hundreds of answers to this question. This Rashi, Vayas Kein Aaron, La'agit Shvachol Shal Aaron Shaloshina, we've said 3 or 4 answers tonight. There are hundreds of answers to this question. So why are there so many hundreds of answers to this question and to that question? Because these questions are connected to the hidden light of the oral Torah. So in these areas, you have the hidden light. So again and again, you have more and more and more understanding that comes about through this study. So may we all merit to appreciate the hidden lights, the oral Torah, and to have the courage, l'hagid shvachos shel Aaron, to say the praise of Aaron, Shaloshina, to maintain the passion and excitement of the beginning every day as we continue.